Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with The Brothers Wiss number 76. I'm coming all the way from Texas, the motherland, College Station. It's football day. So everybody else is actually watching the game. And, you know, I'm keeping it seen. I like to think of myself as the placebo in town. I'm the only one that hasn't, like, bought into the A&M football, the Aggies, man. It's like a cult, right? And so I'm just kind of a casual observer on the outside. So I stay over here from a safe distance looking at all of the crazies. But then with us today, we've got Mikey from Chicagoland.
How's it going?
Hey, hey. And then just above me in the video, for you guys that are actually watching, we've got Dave all the way from Los Angeles.
Hey, what's up? And every time you introduce me, I'm going to play a different song from the 90s.
Oh, my God.
Remember that one?
All right, cut it. Cut
all right.
Because then we'll get copyright infringed. That was just enough.
Oh,
that
snap.
Was perfect. Okay. You get like a second and a half, and then you're safe. You gotta have some traveling music. You got an intro.
Yeah.
What you need is like a big old dude behind you with a boombox on his shoulder just following you everywhere, playing your theme song.
That's my bouncer.
I'm going to tell your wife you called her a bouncer. So new patrons, for those who haven't heard us say it a million times, we have a patron account, patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Whenever we grab a new one, we throw them a shout out here. We got Cedric Laurent. I'm not sure how you're supposed to say that. We do have a very active Slack that is patron only. So whenever you sign up for Patreon, you actually get access to the Slack. And I heard somebody, I think it was Ollie, said the other day, he said, this place is really, how did he phrase it? Something like really relaxed, because he joined, I think, a couple of Wisp groups on Facebook. And I guess there was some fairly vicious attacks going on at the time, or just, I don't know, you know, stuff, the internet is the internet, right? And when stuff's wide open, things get a little hairy. So I guess just the civil discourse we tend to have, even if people disagree, it's still civil, right? We keep it classy. So I took that as, I put that on my sash as a badge of honor there. I really enjoyed hearing that. But speaking of patrons who help us keep the lights on, we also have our ever vigilant sponsor, Sonar. Scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing operational support system. Keep all of your stuff together for you guys with Rick and Morty. Get your stuff, get it all together, and put it in a bag. Just put it in a bag. And that is Sonar. They're great at that. And not only are they actually getting so popular out in the real world, because I mean, I run into more people using it, but we've kicked
real world. So like Walmart. You find some Sonar users at Walmart.
Well, a lot of, yeah. That in like five teeth altogether. That's what you find at Walmart. We've created a channel just for Sonar in our Slack. That's how much discourse is going on about it. So, pop over to sonar.software, give those guys a look, see what you think. You guys ready to jump into, the stuff with the things?
I'm ready to make fun of Mike and you. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds fun. Let's see who gets more jabs in first. Mike made note of, because it was in the release notes from the newest MikroTik, what is that, 6.43? Is that where we're at? That just came out not too long ago?
I think so.
They actually are renaming their release channels. Is that blowing your skirt up, Mike?
It means the same thing to me.
So
there's three different sets, and don't use the first one in production. Second one's probably okay.
Well, they used to call it what, RC release candidate, and now they've changed that to beta. Is that right?
No. Well, I think the software download was always called beta, even if the chain was not.
And then current has changed to stable, right?
And yeah,
And Bugface is changed to something else.
Long term, your legacy, long term, stable, and testing.
There you go.
Yet, and I heard, and so testing is now 644. 643 is now stable.
Yeah.
I heard some commentary the past few days about people's problems with 643, so.
Yeah, 643 introduced some new encryption stuff. So a couple of things aren't backwards compatible, right? So bandwidth test, if you're on a 643 box, you're trying to do a bandwidth test to anything prior to that. I think since they changed the encryption scheme, that doesn't work. And then also I think you can't ROM on from a lower version to a 643 box. Is that right?
That's right here in the major changes in 6.43. It's at microtik.com/download/changelogs.
Yeah, so it seems like most of the complaints I've seen are based on those two things. People just didn't happen to read the changelog and note those differences.
Wait, so people don't read changelogs or release notes? Or
gasp.
Yeah,
it happens.
But I like how they're...
All right, you go.
I like how they are organizing things now in their release notes. They have major changes. They list some of the vulnerability patches that they've done. And 6.43 seems to have a ton of fixes.
Yeah, they've really got some new stuff, not just fixes too, though. Like, yeah, I think they added DHCP snooping, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And then they added some preliminary Option 82 stuff. I think snooping, though, on most hardware is done all on the CPU. I think it's only like the CRS300s that maybe do it offload in hardware. Does that sound right, Mikey?
I don't know. Usually they do things in software first before they figure out how to do it in hardware. Yeah.
Well, I tested it on a HAP AC Lite, I think. And whenever you enable DHCP snooping on a bridge interface, once you actually kick it on, if it's not supported in hardware, it actually turns off hardware acceleration on your bridge ports. So use that with caution because no longer is the switching done in hardware. It kind of turns that off.
I would think they'd pop up something, at least in the first couple of versions, like, you know, do they introduce a feature like that? Be like, hey, you turn this on, you have this setting. Because most people don't actually read the release notes, so they're not going to know.
Yeah, I was looking at the wiki entry about it, and it mentioned something, and I was watching, and then, yeah, the H went away on all those bridge ports as soon as enabled it.
Can I just ask a question about DHCP snooping? Why not just block, you know, UDP port 60, what is it, 66, 67, or 67, 68?
Yeah, it's a
for DHCP.
Code. It's one of those. You could do a bridge filter, I guess, and put it in there.
But snooping just does it like some stuff behind the scenes. It just does that filtering behind the scenes, and off you go, which is kind of against what MikroTik, or I wouldn't say against, but what MikroTik tries to stay away from. They don't like these one-click configuration things. But you know what? A lot of vendors are doing quote-unquote DHCP snooping.
Yeah, DHCP snooping has been, that's been boilerplate for years on switches.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like how if you look at the new switching configurations they're doing in the bridge interfaces when you go to the VLAN tab, they're calling it tagged and untagged. And it took them, 15 years to actually use the industry standard nomenclature for tagged and untagged. And so to me, DHCP snooping is just like another one of those keeping up with the Joneses sort of things. You know, it's industry wide. Everybody understands it. So, you know, why not just go ahead and implement it? Even if you're doing a little bit of trickery on the back end, it still makes sense to me, at least to call it snooping in and do it in that way.
So now different manufacturers put different things under the DHCP snooping umbrella. You know, some will do, you know, it's just, you know, DHCP isolation. You know, some will do a DHCP proxy of sorts. Some do it just to keep track of, like, you know, I've got some DSLAMs that, you know, they have a mode where they're not involved in the DHCP transaction, but they just want to know what IPs are being fetched from that interface to put into it a table of, you know, IPs on the interface. But then other manufacturers go all the way into option 82 type stuff, you know, doing relay. I've seen that put under the snooping umbrella before too. It's like, how extensive does this umbrella go? Are some too small or some too much, you know?
Yeah, and then when Mike's talking about option 82, that's whenever you're passing DHCP through a device, it can kind of add some additional information, right, about which device. So like if it's going into a switch, it can tell you which switch is actually sending that request and maybe even what port it's on, right? So you can do some additional stuff in there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Never knew what that was for. Never cared to.
Yeah, and so like in like the wireless space, which would be most applicable to this cast, some manufacturers have implemented, they will tag along the MAC address or some other identifier for a CPE. So then, you know, they'll have the CPE in bridge mode doing this relay. And then when they, you know, when the customer's router does a DHCP request, the ISP's DHCP server knows what customer it is without having to track customer router MAC addresses. So they just knows, okay, this IP, or you know, this CPE proxied the request. So now here is your IP and other, you know, whatever things they have to do along with that. You know, in some of the DSLAMs I work with, they tag along, you know, this is the chassis number, the card number, the port number. And then which service ID or VLAN or whatever within that port. So then you can specify different, you know, specific IPs for specific port VLAN combinations across the whole infrastructure.
Yeah. I know some manufacturers also use DHCP snooping for additional things, like in a Cisco switch. It basically builds with this, I don't know why they named it this, the DHCP snooping binding table. So it's basically this port has these MAC addresses on it, right? So whenever you make a request and the DHCP server answers, it just adds that entry into a table that says this IP lives off of this port, right? So it keeps you from spoofing IP addresses and stuff like that. But you can also in Cisco do something called dynamic ARP inspection. So it can block MAC addresses and I think also gratuitous ARPs and things like that off a port based on the snooping binding table, right? But if you don't have DHCP snooping enabled, you can't build that table, so you can't use those extra features. So, you know, I think it's useful in a lot of ways. Not to say MikroTik does that or really anybody else, but I know Cisco does it. And it's it can be a pretty effective way of protecting your network. I know a fun little fact, though, is if you turn on dynamic ARP inspection, it'll let you do that without DHCP snooping, and then just everything quits working altogether. It's really fun when that happens, and I've had it misbehave sometimes and just entire chunks of networks quit working for some odd reason. So it's always interesting when you run into little bugs like that, but it's a cool feature. I'm glad they're still integrating new stuff in there. All right. So while we're talking about MikroTik, you want to talk about their new gear they just released?
Sure.
All right. So they put out a newsletter, but really the newsletter just kind of talks about the hardware. So they have the 4011 that just came out. So they have the 4011 wireless, right, which is dual chain. It's got four antennas. It's starting to look like those Asus Spiders or whatever.
Oh, God, don't ever compare those two. Seriously. Don't even say that word on this show anymore.
Oh, but it's got a quad-core ARM processor, 1.4 gigahertz. I think isn't it the same processor that's in the 1100 AHX4, I think, that's got...
Yes, it is, but yeah. There was one difference with the AH11X4. I forgot what it was. Nick was telling me about it.
It's got 10 gig ports. It's got an SFP plus cage, so it's actually got 10 gig off of this guy, whereas the 1100 AHX2 does not.
How would you even use that? Well, you got 10 ports, 10 gig ports, so I guess, yeah, if you're flanking them 100%, you can, okay, it's whatever.
If you have a bunch of access points of whatever variety, and you have a, 60 gigahertz or 80 gigahertz backhaul that does multiple gigs, if you need more than one gig.
Oh, for that one port? Where are you going to send it?
Not bonded. Yeah, so then, you know, it could have 2 gigs backhaul feeding it or something like that.
It would also be good for, say you got an office building that you've got dark fiber into, and you want to feed, a gig port to each one of those customers. I mean, that would be a really good endpoint device like that. They have it in 2 versions, the wireless and wired, right? I guess wireless and non-wireless, whatever. The wireless, they're saying street price is about $250. The wired, they're saying it's about $200. About $200. Yeah. And it comes with rack ears, which is cute.
It's kind of weird. It's still the small form factor case, as opposed to like the RB3011 rack mount and the 2011 rack mount. It's pretty much the same case, but 4011 just has that super tiny case with the extended ears, whatever. Go to the website, you take a look at it.
I think it looks clean. I like the design. It's supposedly cast aluminum body, I think. So it's going to be good for heat dissipation. And I think it'll have some heft to it. So it'll actually, feel like an industrial piece of equipment, which is nice.
And I guess some distinction here is that they've announced some of this stuff before, but it's hit Microtik.com, which means that it should be on shelves shortly, and it means that there's pricing available now too. So like that 4011 is MSRP at $200, and the wireless one I think was only like $50 more. And so that's that's kind of a big thing, is that it's $50 more. So it's now we know pricing and we know it's going to be here. You should be able to get it probably before the Whisper show.
Scrolling down the list, they have their CWDM cassette here. And we've talked about this before, but again, as Mike said, this has street price now, and they're saying it's $360, which sounds a lot more expensive than Fiberstore had it, but I might be crazy. Not that I'm super worried about it. They're also talking about,
I looked it up and it wasn't too significant. Like it wasn't enough to really be a thing to avoid or to attract you either way.
All right. Let's see. There's a 2 gigahertz sector. I don't care about that. They have a SXT SQ Lite 60. So they have a 60 gigahertz SXT, kind of the little square guys, which I like that new form factor, actually. The interesting thing about these is it says you can use up to 8 of these jokers to connect to a WAP 60. If you do, I can't remember where I was doing the digging, but I think these guys only have a 100 meg port on them. So even though the 60 gigahertz WAPs and LHGs can do a gig throughput, these little clients go into one that can only do 100 megs, which is, I guess, why you can do up to 8 of these things.
I can't imagine the chipset itself doesn't have gig support, so it's got to be just pennies of difference in actual costs. So why wouldn't they just make it a gig?
Maybe it's so you don't overrun the 60 gigahertz WAP. Maybe they don't want people plugging in 8 of these things with full gig to a WAP 60, and they're like, why am I not getting all this throughput?
What's the beam width of the WAP 60 anyway?
I think it's 60 degrees.
How wide could you go?
Somewhere running.
Jesus, wow, that's really wide for that kind of megahertz. That's really wide.
Well, they do the beamforming and stuff, right? So hopefully that helps. I'm sure when you're
still
using
you want more gain.
Yeah, I mean, these things are wide like that. You probably don't get a whole lot of distance. I think they're saying the SXT Lite 60s up to 200 meters. So it's for a fairly.
They
small
can narrow
deployment.
The. Well, short distance, but if they can narrow down the beam. And by the way, why doesn't Microtik have anything that's got a really narrow beam width so they can get more gain out of it? How come it's always like 60 is the I think was 60 the smallest beam width I've ever seen, or 40?
They may have had something that was 30, but I'm not sure.
It's still like all the other manufacturers maybe have like things that are like 3 degrees.
Maybe like the Dynadish or something like that.
I don't know. I'll look it up. Last time I checked, it didn't have that. None of them have narrow beam widths.
They probably tell you to buy something with pigtails so you can just go to whatever antenna you want.
Yeah,
which goes over to like the base box 6. Although that's, isn't that a 6 gigahertz radio? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and there's no way they're going to be able to use that here in the States. So I'm not sure what market that was intended for.
Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't really apply to us, right?
I mean, like, we have licensed 6 gig. It's just like the requirements are so high as far as like the you know quality of the output, you know, of the RF output. And it's extremely rare for something Wi-Fi based to be able to meet those requirements. You know, that's why they're always, you know, $10,000 for a link instead of, you know, $400.
Interesting.
They're also sporting a couple of new SFP modules. Looks like 80 kilometer optics. They're saying street price on a regular duplex optic is $40. And I think they have a BD pair over here that's 90 for the pair. It looks like BD. Or BiDi, however you want to say it, bidirectional. So transmits on one frequency and receives on the other in 80 kilometer. I mean, it's not terrible on the price.
I'm just buying so much from Fiberstore. I just kind of wonder, like, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, Microtech does have a larger distribution channel than Fiberstore, but, you know, Fiberstore is catching up. You know, they got 2 U.S. warehouses. They got Australia and a bunch of others, you know, and like, a couple in Europe.
I've had really good success using the Cisco coded optics in Microtech kit. So if you look at, I think the single mode 10 gig Microtech optic is somewhere street price around 130, 140, depending on what vendor you're looking at. And if you look at the equivalent Cisco optic on Fiberstore, it's like $40. So, I mean,
I just got them for 35.
Yeah, there you go.
Standard distance 10 gig. Yeah, those are, or single mode. Yeah, those are, I think last ones we bought were 34. There you go. Yeah.
Cheap as hell, but when you got to buy 12 of them, it adds up.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So it definitely makes sense to get the Cisco coded fiber stores as opposed to the Microtech ones. Not that I'm telling anybody. In my way, you're supposed to be very lawyerly about it. In my opinion, it seems more thrifty to do it one way versus the other. But
dude, everybody's going to go to where the price is best and it's reliable. Whatever. but does Microtech even have an OAC? Instead of a DAC cable, I bought a whole bunch of OACs with an optical something.
Yeah, it's an AOC. It's an active optical
AOC,
cable.
Active optical cable, yeah. Does Microtech even make those?
No.
All right, there. So it's not even competition. Cool. Guys, we got to really pick this up because if I was driving in the car listening to this podcast, I'd fall asleep and crash into something and probably get hurt.
Yeah,
so
knowing what you stick to your windshield.
Can we get some variation in, get some variation in your voices? Mike, wake the fuck up. Seriously, do something.
Oh, thanks for telling us how great we are. Appreciate that, Dave.
Mike bought me an award. I'm not going to say what it was. Mike bought me an award, and he didn't realize that inside the package, it has a thank you note. And you scan the QR code and it says, "Dear Mike Hammett, thank you for your gift." And you just click send and it sends him an email.
Oh,
so,
how convenient. That was so sweet.
Thank you for that award.
Thank you for the award. I appreciate it. I have videos of it.
All right. So something I found interesting that started from, I think, one of the Facebook WISP groups was somebody was complaining about how their Ubiquiti CPEs keep losing management access. Like for whatever reason, they're still passing traffic. They can get to websites. Everything seems okay. They can ping through. They can ping to it. They just can't use the web interface. All of a sudden, it just stops. The only way they can fix it is to reboot. And they noticed it's starting to get more and more pervasive, excuse me, inside their networks, more and more radios. So after doing a little bit of digging, I found a Ubiquity Forum post on it, and it seemed like, and I still haven't really seen anything definitive on this, but they're saying that port 10,001 is open, and it's some kind of discovery port on the Ubiquity CPE stuff, and it looks like maybe somebody out in the wild is doing some kind of testing, maybe trying to do an exploit or something like that, and maybe when they probe this port enough or mess with it enough, it locks up the CPE's HTTP or HTTPS server, whatever it happens to be.
Or maybe that's the purpose of the exploit.
It could be.
Who knows?
It could be. Usually it's, you know, I mean, they want to get something out of it as opposed to just kind of jam people up. So it seems like a lot of people are saying go ahead and block 1001 coming in from the internet on your firewalls. But then
Wait,
I saw
was it
some
1001
people,
or
10,000? Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. But then yeah. I saw somebody say that they had blocked 10,001 after reading this post and it was still happening. So I don't 100% know it. And there's no resolution in the thread to it yet. It sounds like they're trying to set up some honeypots and just figure out what's going on. But I was just curious, for any of you guys listening, if you've run into this, if you've seen it, because there was a lot of people jumping on that bandwagon saying they've started seeing this. So hopefully they nail down whatever this is, or if anybody has found a fix for it, you know, drop us a note. I'd be really curious. Mike, you run a lot of Ubiquity stuff with public IPs right on the radios, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen any of this?
I have not noticed any ill effects. I've been pretty busy. You know, I haven't been hopping into radios to check things, but I've been hunting for problems, but you know, same time, I don't have any alarms going off in my monitoring systems. I don't have any, you know, customers, you know, calling, you know, ranting about some problems.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting part. They said everything continues to pass traffic just fine. They just can't get to the administration of the CPE anymore.
Yet, and like what's interesting is that, so while we keep beating in people's heads about securing your MikroTik, you know, because 2 years ago it was Ubiquity, you know, secure Ubiquity, upgrade your Air Max radios. Meanwhile, there's this. I see conversations from people that are not happy with the Ubiquity AirCube because it comes by default with the WAN. Like, it's not discoverable over WAN, which is what it should be. And they are leaving Ubiquity entirely to go to MikroTik or something else because they have to reach it over the WAN. I'm like, that's exactly what you should not be doing. Like, every time they comment, I just hit reply. No, you should not be doing this. You should not do that. And he's going to do it, so. You know, his network, not mine, I guess.
Well, can I just ask a simple question? With my equipment, management always gets VLANed and always is in a private network. And the only way to get to that private network, if you're outside of your network, is to VPN to it. How fucking hard is that to do?
Well, it's a little bit trickier on the CPEs because there's far less intelligence on those, you know, just like a nano station or whatever it happens to be. And if you've got a public IP and you're natting your customers through that, you know, on the CPE itself, then that port, I guess, is technically open.
But the management portion of it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it... Nobody was really saying if they were running a separate subnet with management. I think whatever it is this vulnerability is, it crashes the web server on the CPE itself. Mike, you've got Wispapalooza on here. That's coming up soon. You two cats are going. So what updates did you have on that?
I was just saying that I think the admission ticket price goes up here in the next couple of days. If it hasn't already, same with the hotel room blocks expiring, if they still have any. We got less than 30 days. In a month, I'll be back home from Wispapalooza. So,
Which hotel are you staying at? You staying at the Rio?
Yeah. Yeah, at some of the other shows, I had tried staying elsewhere, like if I had Fantown, I'd stay with them or whatever. And it used to be such a logistical difficulty when you're not where everybody else is. Even if I have family in town, I will visit them and I stay at the hotel. It's just easier.
Is that his connection or mine?
Yeah, it's Mike's connection. He's breaking up real bad.
What kind of shit internet connection do you have, Mike?
the one that was hit by lightning not that long ago.
So, Dave, is there anything particular that you're going to be doing that you need to plug?
I don't really need to plug. I mean, I'll just mention what I'm going there to do.
Yeah, plug it.
Two things. I'm going to be doing training with Baltic Networks. Dan from Baltic Networks, who I call my stoic friend, and I are going to be training 30 people on the MTCNA.
Is that class full?
And that's pretty damn full. 30? Yeah, that's pretty full.
Are you guys still accepting new entries?
No, originally it was like 20, and then they called me and they were like, you think we could do 30? And I'm like, sure, why not? We got two trainers. Let's do it.
Well, how about so, I'll come and help you and let's do 50.
Really? Damn, that's serious.
No, let's do 60. Hey, I can handle 30 on my own. Come on.
Really? Shit, dude. That's pretty serious.
No.
When it comes to the labs, you got to run around and plug in wires and see what people are doing wrong. And God... But yeah, that's what I'm doing there. And then also my wife's nephew just got accepted into college over there. He got in on a full hockey scholarship.
That's so bizarre. Hockey scholarship in Vegas.
Yeah, right? I mean, the hottest place in the world. Yeah, and they have in Dubai, they have an indoor ski slope. So go figure. But yeah, he's looking to get accepted by the NHL. They're looking at him. And it's fun. I bought him. I got him an award.
Yeah, you've told us all about his award.
Yeah, yeah. So he has one, and the dorm loves it. The door handle on the fridge broke, so they replaced it with the award. God. So every time you go up to open the fridge, you gotta hold the award.
Oh, God. All right. So let's see. I have a couple of discussion topics. One thing I was curious about, because I've been sort of researching disaster recovery and kind of how people do storage and all that stuff, blah, 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 was an Amazon S3 bucket versus Dropbox or say box.com, and sort of what's the difference between those. And I sort of thought I knew what it was, and I just verified it in the Slack a couple of days ago, because there's a lot more server centric guys in there than me. I just sort of dabble. But Amazon S3, you basically pay by how much you store, and it's sort of broken into three categories. One is active, you're using these files all the time. One is less active. I can't remember what the nomenclature is for it, but you don't access it very often, and it actually is cheaper to store it that way. And then they have what they call cold storage, which is super cheap, but they expect you to never utilize it, right? It's for like HIPAA compliance or something, where you have to store files for 30 years or some junk like that. And it seems like Amazon S3 bucket is great if you need like a file storage for an office and they just need like a window share over to it. Whereas Dropbox and Box are more like every user has to have an account, right? That you kind of log in and out of. I'd really like a way, just kind of a general Dropbox or general bucket that people could just dump giant files in. For me personally, because I was thinking about on this podcast having you guys record your audio locally and then dump it into something convenient, and so I haven't really figured out what the best way for that is. If you guys have any ideas, any of the listeners have any ideas, let me know what you think about that. Are you guys using any of the S3? I mean, everybody uses Dropbox, right? It's pretty common.
So I use Dropbox's file request feeder for something. Some of that, you know, I send people URLs, and then they go to this URL and upload, you know, whatever files to this website, and it goes right into my Dropbox.
Was that something that's always live? So I could just create one of those and send you guys a link, and then whenever you're done with some stuff, you just dump it in there, or is it sort of a one-time thing?
It's customizable. You can do various things, including, you know, forever.
I'm curious. Dropbox is mostly for just file sharing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for people sharing files. Whereas I think Amazon might be, well, last I remember, it was just for storage. But they've obviously changed from that.
Yeah. So I know some guys that run their, like, I think their active, is it their Active Directory off of that? And I think, like, the Amazon S3 bucket, they tied into it. So, I mean, they were using it like a Windows file server almost. And
I'm curious, does any of these services have an API for those programmer people that might want to do things with, like, front ends where files are available everywhere? Well, let's see if Dropbox. I'm pretty sure Amazon does, because they pretty much have every feature imaginable. I'm just going to do a search for Dropbox API while you guys talk about other stuff. Mike, what the fuck? What are you flatlining?
Not in the middle of swapping out all the hard drives in a server down in Indy. So I'm doing some KVM stuff.
Oh hell! Well, we're already at an hour and 10 minutes. You guys want to stick a fork in it?
I didn't want to argue with Dave too much, so I just.
Oh, dude, Mike and I, it's hysterical. Mike and I are polar opposites on Facebook. I mean, when I see you, I'm totally cool with you because I don't care.
I think 50% of Mike's posts, he's just baiting. He's just chumming the water, seeing who's gonna come up. Who's going to take the bait.
I had one of those yesterday about rescuing people from hurricanes.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, dude, I saw it. Let's not bring
that. I saw it. I wasn't going for that bait.
Oh, Lord have mercy. All right. So, Mike, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
Don't.
All right. Mike is still dead at the moment, everybody.
I mean, like, I'm working during a podcast, so I know, I'm busy. I
know. All right, so facebook.com/TheBrothersWisp. That is Mike. All of that juicy content that gets put up there, all the links, all of the insights, the witty responses, all those biting criticisms of vendors, which he needs to try and be nicer. He's trying to how to win friends and influence people. It's not by calling them idiots. Or yelling that their products are stupid, Dave. So yeah,
I didn't say their products are stupid.
So
they're piles of
that's,
shit.
That's a good way to get a hold of Mikey is through the Facebook. So thank you again, Mike, for all the great content. Dave, if people are going to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to do that?
You know what? I'm going to send them to my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/bunnynibble.
Oh God! You just wanted to say bunny. Don't nibble. Even ask. Throw out your penny tone stuff real quick. Do that. Okay. Dave's so a VoIP guy. If you want to get some VoIP help, or you do hosted VoIP, right? So you could help people with that.
Yeah, I don't want to help people with their VoIP. I want them to get my
VoIP.
That's
what I'm saying. People need the VoIP stuff, and you can help them do that.
Yep. Phone systems, david@pennytone.com is my email, and soon we're going to be coming out with some pretty cool portal stuff. Nick and I are working on, well, Nick is working on that. But why don't you tell us what you do? Because, you know, you say you have some side companies, and I know some of them are top secret, but we've never heard you plug anything.
Yeah, I'm not talking about really any of them. You can find me at craigsoul.com. You can email me, greg@gregsoul.com, if you feel so inclined. I do consulting work occasionally. It kind of ebbs and flows, you know, how everybody goes. It's cyclical, and so right now is one of my slightly busier times, but I can do a little bit of stuff. I usually like doing PGP stuff. That's kind of my bag. I dig that stuff. What else? Let me grab it. I finished the, not the prototype, but this is the second version with a nice case of the USB boost charger. I had somebody email me. Who was it? It was, he kind of called me out because he said I thought he was an idiot or something like that. Corey Hauer. I didn't think you were an idiot. Actually, I don't remember that interaction. But I'm pretty sure I didn't think you were an idiot. I never think anybody's an idiot. He asked for plans on it. I made a video of it. That's why I haven't responded with plans. I made a video. I just need to edit it and put it up. Kind of a quick build video. Other than the 3D printed case that I have for it, the build takes... There's 4 points you solder. That's it. I'm not even joking. Everything comes pre-configured. And it's, I think each one you can build them for maybe $6 in parts or something like that. It's super cheap, really convenient. So the idea is you can use a USB battery pack boost charger. I'm not going to sell these or anything. I don't want to deal with that. I'm just going to put it up. But they're pretty neat. And so I'll have the plans up either by the time this goes live or the next couple of days up on my blog. So pop in there and check that out. But it boosts a USB port up to 24 volts. And you can run that off your laptop or like a power brick or something like that. So if you want a PoE test radios out in the field, it's like a really cool thing to do site surveys with. I was in some training a while back. And I used it to run a Microtik, like an AC light, I think, so I could connect to their 5 gig and then VPN out. Some people in their networks, they do, it's so stupid.
Dumb things.
Like for their Wi-Fi, they'll do 10.0.0.0/8. That's what they'll make the subnet for their Wi-Fi. So if you pull that IP and you try and VPN in to your office network and it's in a 10 dot anything subnet, it like breaks your VPN. I don't know why people do this stuff. So I use it as a convenient way to just kind of double nap myself to fix all of that. It's really convenient. Anyway, I digress. If you guys have any questions or comments, please shoot them to us. Contact us at thebrotherswisp.com or facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. If you want to join the Patreon only Slack, that's patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. I guess that's it for now. Keep information coming. Keep interacting with us. Be sure not to get any of Dave's awards. Don't do anything crazy. And thank you guys for listening. Bye.
So sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes. We're loud and annoying. But we're informative facts. We're not disappointing. Just give us a listen. Because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry. You're forgiven.